Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
My name is Chad Thomas and I'm joined now by Karam Singh, who is the executive director at an organization we all hold in such high esteem, Corruption Watch. Karam, welcome to the show.
Hi, Chad. Thanks for having me on the program.
Karam, I see our topic today is the report on police corruption, why it's so important and what it demonstrates to the public. But before we get there, just before you came on air with us, I was having one of my rants, and my rants tend to go on for a bit. And sometimes they justify it, sometimes they're not. But my rant today was regarding solidarity, giving the National Prosecuting Authority a deadline in respect of state capture prosecutions. And I thought this was a bit cheeky because the state is inundated with a lot of cases and there's a lot for them to get through. It's not as easy as just taking the Zondo report and applying it from a prosecutorial perspective. Can I ask what your viewpoint is on this statement by Solidarity giving a deadline to the NPA?
Yeah, I had the fortune of listening to some of your rant, Chad, and a lot of it did resonate with me as well. I mean, I think we've consistently been doing what we can to exert some advocacy and pressure on the NPA to be able to execute its mandate. We know the cases have been slow, and we know that there's a lot of frustration out there about that. But to begin to sort of put an agency like that to terms by way of an ultimatum, I'm not sure that that's really the moment that we're at. I mean, we've got to accept that both the police and the NPA are really under the cosh. You know, they were subjected to state capture. It's taken them a while to get their structures in place. Let's support the NPA to get the to prioritize the cases they need to prioritize, and to ensure that we have some successful prosecutions. Once we can get those first couple of prosecutions going, then we can maybe begin to put additional pressure to say, how can you guys, you know, build more efficiencies into your system? How can you, you know, be more capacitated to really execute your mandate? Because at the moment, they don't have that capacity. They don't have that track record. So we're really, you know, we're working from a little bit of a low base here to begin to start putting ultimatums that's anything other than just a kind of grandstanding.
Well, I agree with you, and I appreciate you giving us that very straightforward, honest answer, because what I think a lot of people don't realize, if they haven't been following the news and they haven't been following the reports, is that the Zondo, the first reports that came out actually gave much of a shout out to civil society, to organizations such as yourself and others, as well as to the media for actually exposing a lot of what had occurred with state capture. And I don't think it should stop there. I think if one looks at units like the anti-corruption task team that was established some years back that involved the special investigating unit, the NPA, the then Scorpions, they had a lot of active involvement from private sector. And I think that if we do want to cut the head off this beast and we do want to expedite, we can't just lay out deadlines without giving a suggestion. And one of the suggestions going forward is to involve participation from the private sector, which have played such a significant role. And even Zondo has commended the civil society for this.
Absolutely. Look, there's a lot of skills residing in civil society. There are a lot of skills residing in the private sector, even if you go to, you know, within the legal profession at the bar and the big firms of attorneys that we have. You know, as far as I understand, you know, some large firms have approached the NPA to say, we're available to assist you, you know, as appropriate in helping to prosecute these cases. So I think, you know, the NPA is still evaluating those requests and considering that. But again, you know, maybe that's a fruitful place for us to be putting some pressure on the NPA to say, you know, there's no point in keep coming back to us to say you've got capacity challenges. We know you've got, you know, the budget allocation that you have, you know. Work with us, work with the skills that are out there to get us past this backlog. You know, there's no way that we can prioritize these cases. There's no way we can begin to see successful corruption cases with the existing capacity. So, you know, there's got to be that dialogue. There's got to be that offer of assistance, but there also has to be that, reception on behalf of the NPA and government to receive that type of assistance to help execute their mandates.
So, Karam, one of the concerns, of course, you voiced right in the beginning of our conversation is the fact that state capture caused a knock-on effect with regards to our law enforcement agencies, our prosecutorial authorities, with regards to the fact that they themselves were captured. And we always hear the expression how a fish rots from the head down. So when you have lower-ranking members seeing senior members on the take or appointed simply because of their political affiliation, it causes corruption. That's the reality of it. Now, you've released a report on police corruption. Tell us a little bit about the report, how it came about, and why it is so important that this report be read and disseminated.
The report that we've released is our 2021 annual report. So it's a report which chronicles all the work that Corruption Watch did last year. So there's a huge section of it related to issues of the police. You know, Corruption Watch, we still have channels where people can report issues of corruption to us. We try to engage with reporters and whistleblowers to assist where we can. We continue to see, you know, any number of claims relating to the police. So, you know, that gives us an understanding of the type of corruption challenges that we're sitting with the police, and then provides a kind of engagement point for going forward. So obviously it's positive that we have a new police commissioner, you know, the president, you know, somewhat quickly this time, because sometimes he takes his time to make these appointments, has made a kind of decisive decision. So, you know, the police really has been one of our big corruption vulnerabilities going back even prior to the era, the so-called formal era of state capture. So no one's thinking that we've turned a corner on the police, or that, you know, that just we kind of make a few appointments and we're going to get a much better police department. So, you know, from Corruption Watch's standpoint, I think broadly from the standpoint of civil society, we've got to keep the police within our focus, and we need to keep messaging around the need for, you know, for a cleaned up police force, particularly at that level of the leadership, because otherwise they're not going to be able to execute their mandate when it comes to fighting corruption. If we can't trust the police, who can we trust?
Karim, I'm generally the eternal optimist when it comes to our country, but even my feelings are at an all-time low when one just sees the impact that state capture has had. And even when we saw what happened with the COVID pandemic with respect to the wholesale theft of PPE funds. So I'm concerned. Do you think we are turning the corner? Can I get my enthusiasm up a bit? You know, we've got a new head of the ID. We've got a new head of the police. We have what seems to be a very dedicated and knowledgeable head of the DPCI in General Labir. Are we turning that corner?
It's slow going, you know, and I think we're still turning the corner as opposed to having turned the corner yet. And, you know, what you're pointing to, you know, solid, potentially solid leadership at the Hawks, an independent national prosecuting authority, the police on a better track. We're getting good reports coming out of SARS now. You know, SARS was another institution that was captured. We've got new leadership there. So let's give credit where credit's due, and let's back the new leadership that's in place. But I think it's way too early for us to say that we've turned a corner. And I think we're right to be concerned. And we're right that it's correct that we digest what's happened from the Zondo Commission and take stock, you know, and not knock the commission. I mean, the commission has done its job. It cost a lot of money, but we have a record now of what happened. Now, that's a victory for transparency. And transparency is a pillar of any kind of anti-corruption approach. Where we need to see some headway now is in this space of accountability. And that's still to come. So until we see, you know, people prosecuted, until we see money recovered from those very people that are fingered in the Zondo report, you know, until we see that, then we can't say that we've really turned a corner yet. So, you know, the work is all still to be done, but there's no reason why we should feel defeated in this moment. We need to, you know, we need to continue to muster the energy to push on with this fight.
You're 100% right. Once there's a couple of wins under the belt, and significant wins, there's going to be a change in attitude. Do you think government is communicating effectively to the masses the dangers of corruption and what corruption has done to broaden that gap of disparity between the haves and the have-nots?
No. I don't think consistently we're seeing that kind of messaging. You know, even the president's State of the Union address, which we listened to very carefully, had a dedicated section on corruption. But if you read that section in isolation, it didn't seem like he connected that to his analysis of the economy. So, you know, we see the president speak very kind of, you know, with real vigor around the economy and the need to grow the economy. Then he talks about corruption. We don't see that linkage in his argument to say it's actually corruption which is holding back economic development. It's corruption which is deepening inequality. It's corruption which is basically a roadblock in the place of kind of development. So, you know, we need that kind of really strong messaging, and then that needs to then be consistently drawn through into provincial structures, into local government, and into schools. Now, if you think about the 2010 World Cup, there was that sense we were sort of all in that together, and there was this kind of constant kind of refrain around the messaging around that. And we don't feel that. I don't feel that around, even in the way that we responded to the pandemic, there was a bit of rallying around the, you know, the need to make sacrifices. But, you know, we don't see that kind of consistent and kind of passionate messaging around corruption and around our kind of zero tolerance towards corruption. So I think we can ask more of our leaders when it comes to, you know, when it comes to not just the fight, but even the messaging around it.
Karim Singh, Executive Director at Corruption Watch, thank you so much for joining us today. I look forward to continued conversations with you in the weeks, months, and years to come. Thank you so much for joining us today.